means it can rule. The rule being made of two syllables. It ruins and also fools. That's why it's called rule. The brain which rules, ruins and fools. Can the brain be disallowed from doing that? Can the mind be placed in its own realm? To think, all right, you must think. It's very nice. There is no harm at all. He has to think out a lot of things, I mean, with all those tapes to put them all together. That's the proper role of the mind. But does the brain want to rule? And can it be made to realize that it cannot rule? If it wants to rule, it will ruin and fool. And then it can be used as a tool. Simple. Some light guy, like the world.
Seems like the brain starts working fast when something happens somewhere else that's uncomfortable. Your emotions are somewhere that's painful. The mind tries to figure out a reason or a way to avoid that the next time.
Figure out a reason, yes, but way to avoid it next time doesn't happen. That again is not its proper role. It tries to rationalize it to comfort itself. Or to fool itself. That, I know why it happened, I know why I did it. Of course you know why you did it. That's not the point, but still, the pain is still pain. And instead of, it's an unnecessary rationalization. Pain is pain. Why must I rationalize and find a reason for it? And therefore, a dog which probably doesn't have as much of a sophisticated brain as you and I have, is able to avoid the trouble from a great distance. Even your pet dog will not eat unless it is, if it is sick. But the human brain being terribly sophisticated, it invents a reason why I must eat, even when I'm terribly sick. Otherwise, she'll be offended, I'm a guest here, etc. And then I run into more trouble. Instead, if the brain didn't rationalize at all, and the pain was allowed to make the choice, rule the situation, you'd avoid it. Right? If the pain itself only makes the decision. Then it would avoid the repeating the mistake, and that means immediate liberation.
Why did the human race get to the point of having to? I feel like I have to learn with my brain first, almost, what you're saying, in order to get back to that. Why? What's the human race? Why did we?
That's it. We have been left behind in the race. We are not a human race. We are all in the same race, we and the animals and the plants and so on. But in this race, we have been left behind, and therefore we are called the human race. They are way ahead of us. And I was reading a book, somebody sent me that. Physiological psychology? Psychology of something. And they say our brain is tremendously developed. That is because nothing else, no other part of our personality or being has begun to develop. And so all the development has merely taken place in the brain. And we need all this brain in order to figure out 2 + 2 = 4. Silly. Whereas a dog can merely sniff. I've been watching, where did we go? Not only in Spokane, in quite a number of, in Vancouver also I noticed it, somewhere. Yeah, right. You didn't see. A dog was flying past the highway, avoiding cars by inches. It's fantastic. And I don't know if you have noticed it, a dog when it wants to, it merely smells. If the cars are coming and if it will have time to cross the road, you and they have to see, you and they have to have radars, and you and they have to have binoculars. Just by sniffing, it knows. Just by sniffing, it knows whether there is going to be rain this evening or not. You and they have to have a weather bureau and then the telephone to get in touch with the weather bureau, the radio to. That's it. That's the point. So we are probably low down in this human race.
How does that fit into evolution in that we came, that we evolved from beings that had this all together before?
Who said so?
Scientists.
Who is he? Is he a dog or a man? Is he a monkey or a man? Is he a man? Did you ever ask the monkey? That is true. Swami Shivananda has written a nice little poem. Probably it's in a book called Wisdom and Humor. A few monkeys got together and told one another that Darwin is wrong. Because we could never have given birth to this. We have never done any of these things and they are good. They say man is descended from us, no? Absurd.
I read a very lovely story about that man who was studying telepathy among the animals to see how they knew so much. And he went trekked for miles into the African bush, found some monkeys and they didn't mind him too much, so he sat down and watched them. Hours and hours. All of a sudden they disappeared. So he thought, well, there must be something in this. I'll just sit here for a few more hours and see what happens. About 4 hours later, a bunch of hunters came into the same clearing. They knew that the monkeys were there under normal circumstances. And they were talking amongst themselves. They had started out 4.5 hours before, which is when the monkeys left.
That's it. I mean, I've seen this. In spite of it, they don't seem to have caught up with our atrocities. That the guns, they have to get used to the guns a bit more. Otherwise, they can smell. I also saw, when first the Americans started experimenting with monkeys, for some kind of sudden research projects. And there was a sudden demand for more monkeys. They set out buying monkeys from India. And Indians also were trying to catch the monkeys and sell them to the Americans for experiments. And they used to come to Rishikesh in the ashram area and trap those monkeys. Hardly one monkey ever got into the trap. Especially the ashram monkeys, they're more clever, right? I saw this literally with my own eyes. They had set up a trap and put peanuts and peanuts everywhere on the terrace. And one monkey was going round and round and round and round the trees and the neighboring things. Any little monkey which was tempted by this peanuts, was chased by the other one. Get out of this place. That's it. It's a trap thing. It's not peanuts, somebody is feeding you. Hello? Chased, tore the other monkeys to pieces if they came anywhere near. That's it. He didn't succeed at all. Till they were sort of trapped in beyond any reasonable chance of escape. It was difficult to catch them. You know, and then while we watch and we invent our own theories why. Those theories are invented by us, not by the monkeys. They are far greater geniuses than we are, perhaps. I did this myself. I had a shelf full of Swami Shivananda's books, and it was kept in a dark room. Once I went in and saw white ants coming in, termites coming in. Then I traced their path, they were coming down the steps and so on. I spread thick, half an inch thick of DDT powder throughout to prevent them from coming in. After a month, I went back again, I saw the white ants building another tunnel into the shelf. My God, how does this happen? They are feeding on the DDT. They have developed a resistance, adaptability. It's fantastic. What they do with all their being, we are merely piecemeal trying to understand with our brain. And because we have been struggling to understand, I am talking of the human being as a race now. Because of our struggle to understand all this, the brain is getting more and more exercise, and therefore it's developing more and more complicated, which they call complex. Complex is supposed to be a very desirable thing. To me, it is complicated. Instead of simplifying the whole thing, we are trying to make it more and more complex and more complicated, and so we do not understand at all. Even when it comes to human relations, there's a special branch of psychology called the social psychology. And so that when a husband and wife fight, they go and refer to the book. What does it say? Social psychology. It doesn't work that way. We must learn to learn through a completely different channel. Can I see directly? Can I see the truth directly? And even in that sentence, the I is used because it is conventional to use it. Can I see the truth directly? And even the I is not involved in this. Then the truth takes over, as it were, and functions. To that truth or understanding or knowledge, the body and the mind are tools. Then there is pure action, isn't that? Action also takes place, happens, yes? It is neither the mind that dictates the action, nor the heart that dictates the action, the knowledge that dictates the action. Knowledge acts. And even when it comes to what we call our trying, we are still trying, as she says, I'm trying to understand it with the brain before I push it down into the heart. How do I push it down into the heart? Fumbling, groping for a way to do this, they invented the meditation techniques. Meditation techniques are nothing but pushing the whole thing into the heart. But coming back to the self-will again, the ego or whatever it is that is projecting the self-will must see that it's important. When that is seen, then the self-will falls away, the self remains. That was the story which is tagged on to the Skela Upanishad. After describing what we discussed this morning, the Upanishad goes on to tell a story. Obviously, the teacher of the Upanishad tells the story. He says, once upon a time, there was a war. War between gods and the demons. How do you know they are gods and the others are demons? The gods won a victory over the demons. Whoever was victorious was God. The others were demons. Same. It happens today, it happened yesterday, and it happened centuries. And who was it that was responsible for the victory? Who was responsible for the victory? I, the commander-in-chief, said one. Oh, you know how marvelously I fought, said the other. And the indwelling intelligence understood this and wanted to humble them. Not humiliate, but humble them. Three of these gods were returning to their abodes. One was Agni, which in Sanskrit means fire, the god of fire. The other was Vayu, the god of wind. The third was Indra, the chief, the president. As they were talking and gloating over their victory and walking along, this indwelling consciousness, intelligence, decided to humble them. And so sprang a surprise, very much like the biblical pillar of smoke and pillar of light, which led the Moses and that gang out of the whatever it is. And so here, right in front of them, there was this pillar of smoke. All three of them halted, they were scared. And they looked at each other, what is that? They didn't know. So they asked first, Agni, the god of fire, go and find out. The other two asked him, go and find out what this is. We have, you know, defeated and destroyed all the demons, very powerful they were. And what is this? Nothing. Go and see what that is. And this Agni walked up. Who are you? And it was perhaps a mountain or something, and they echoed back, who are you? The same sound came back to Agni, who are you? You're asking me, I'm fire. Right? What can you do? Oh, I can burn anything, everything. I can burn anything and everything. Ah, that's good. I picked up a blade of dry grass, kept it in front of this god of fire, try burn it. And Agni went towards it with all its might and main, nothing happened. The dry blade of grass couldn't be burnt. And that shook his morale, so he couldn't even look at this being. Cloud of light, he bolted, ran away, came back to these two, other two. I couldn't find out what that is. It's terribly mysterious. Then they said, all right, let the wind god go? And why you went there? And asked, hey, who are you? And that shouted back, who are you? Said, I am Vayu. And what can you do? I can blow the whole world away. Ah, that's good. Again the same blade of grass. Try this. It couldn't. And so it came back. Vayu also came back. Which symbolically, this is what happens throughout. Speaking is not inherent in the throat or in the vocal cords. Seeing is not inherent in the eyeballs themselves. If you pluck these eyeballs and put them there, they wouldn't see a thing, probably. If they saw, I wouldn't even know what they see. And in the same way, if you examine the mystery of existence, of material existence, you find the same puzzling situation here now and again, every now and then, or perhaps 10,000 times a day. I was swimming in the Dead Sea once in Israel. And you cannot go beyond waist deep. That's all. If you go beyond that, it pushes you up. You can't keep your feet down on the floor of the lake. Pushes you, kicks you up. It's so terrible. And anyone, all of you, can go and sit down on the water, just about this much is underwater, very comfortably, as though you are sitting in a chair, right? And then my host explained to me all the properties of the Dead Sea and so on, how dead it is. And as usual, in my these doubts occur only to me. I was looking down at the bed of the Dead Sea, they said, my God, what keeps all those stones there? Why don't they begin to float? Loose stones, loose, you know, little pebbles. Why don't they come up? Who holds them down? There are these mysteries nearly everywhere. If you open your eyes, you discover that life is a lot more mysterious than we grant. There's a chill wind that is blowing, but your face is uncovered and you don't even seem to notice it. Not for a long time, not till you go to the Arctic Circle. How is it my arms feel cold, chill, my face doesn't? So many questions are there which we have never asked them ourselves. And all these things are possible only to that some mighty intelligence that seems to dwell in every atom of existence, in every blade of grass. And unless that blade, that intelligence allows that blade of grass to be burned, it cannot be burned. In other words, the combustibility of the blade of grass is there. Who ordained it so? That's the question. The blowability of the blade of grass is there. That is why a breeze, even a mild breeze, is able to blow it away. But who ordained that a blade of grass could be blown away and a building cannot be? It's there inherent. It is there inherent in it. And that is the question. Who is it that ordains all these things? Not even the gods. If in Vedanta, they often refer to the senses, your own, the eyes and the ears and the nose and so on. They say that some gods preside over all these. Even they cannot know the intelligence that is inherent in them, of which they are themselves manifestations. The eye cannot know the knowledge. The knowledge knows the eye. Perhaps, if it wants to. And so it is said, even the god of air bolted, came back to the other two and said, sorry, I couldn't find it either. It's too mysterious. And then, I don't know if there are any women's lib members here.
Anyone?
Members of the women's lib. No, practicing members of the women's liberation. You will be happy if there are. Then this, the chief of gods, the president goes to see himself. Who is this? And as he approaches there, that pillar of fire cloud disappears. There stands a beautiful woman. She is the foremost teacher, the mother of the world, Uma. And as Indra approaches this Uma, she says, oh, it's nothing, it is God, Brahman. It was the Supreme Being itself that had mysteriously assumed his form to enlighten you. And it appeared in front of you because you were all too proud that you had achieved the victory. The victory belongs to God, to this cosmic intelligence. Go away. And so this knowledge had to come from Uma, the goddess. Nothing, neither the eye, nor the senses, nor the body, none of these things can really grasp this intelligence. Because they function only by the grace of God. Can we therefore see this truth directly, not intellectually, not by saying, all right, my eyesight is failing, I'll put on a pair of glasses, I can see better. Can I see the eyes are limited in their power? There is a certain power in here, I mean, granted to them, and they function in within that range, not more, not less. The mind functions within a certain range, logic, not more, not less. When their own limitations are seen, they cease to rule you. That's the only thing we can do. That we cannot understand, yeah? How that thing flies.
It seems as though one of the trickiest things is you try to figure out a way to improve yourself, and yet that's at the same time all you should be doing is seeing things as they are.
That's all.
But you're hoping maybe in the future you'll be better, but you know, or you can see ways which you'd prefer to see yourself acting. So how
can
you...
That's the brain that does it. It's the brain that does it, again. It's the brain that does it in a very complicated way. How do I know I will be capable of doing that? Doing what? He does something. Yeah? I watch him do something. He does something now. and I cannot do that now. First of all, I start with the comparison. He is doing it now. I am not able to do it now. And I hope at some future date, I will be able to do what he does now. And by that time, something else might have happened.